1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, Justin Fields is now the quarterback one. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Jared Diamond, a national baseball writer for the Wall Street Journal. We talk with him about some White Sox news and their playoff clinching, what to expect for them in the playoffs, and more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and at sportstalkchicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs. He's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no game with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Find him online at brianismyagent.com. That's brianismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Well, it's finally happening. The day Bears fans have all been waiting for is here. A new era starts today. Yeah, maybe I'm being overdramatic. Hell, it's just a quarterback, just another rookie that could turn out to be a bust, but in all seriousness, Justin Fields is a different talent. He is not Mitch Trubisky, Rex Grossman, Kyle Orton, Cade McNown. He has real talent. He's proven. And to this day, as I've maintained since draft day, he has potential. He will be a quality NFL quarterback. I don't know about elite. I don't know about Patrick Mahomes-esque, but he will be quality. This is not a bust of a pick. And now this Sunday, we finally get to find out what he's made of. In a real start, taking first-team reps all week, practicing, this is the time to shine if you're Justin Fields. I will say, I didn't want him starting right away. I was one of the people who said, land the brakes a bit. Don't rush him. I mean, look what's happened to Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. I called that, by the way. Lawrence has always been in a winning environment. Now look at him. 0-2, countless picks and mistakes. Bad coaching. Bad team. Mentally, that's going to take a toll on him. Zach Wilson, 4 picks, no touchdowns on Sunday. It's going to take a toll. That's why I didn't want Justin Fields starting. What if Justin Fields went out there, threw 4 picks, no touchdowns, 20 passer rating? Everyone would say, well, at least he learned, but I would say the opposite. Well, maybe he learned, but that's going to stick in his head. Why not nurture him? Slowly introduce him, then put him in when you're ready as a team. When you actually have receivers who, you know, could catch the football. When you've mastered the running game and you know your playbook. As Matt Nagy's scripted plays, Matt Nagy's unscripted plays are atrocious. Nevertheless, Justin Fields is going to play now. Last week, a 28 passer rating. The week before, 87.5, 38.2 in the year, but those are limited numbers. That could go up this week. And I'm very curious to see what he does. I will say this. Don't expect the best from Justin Fields. And that's not me knocking on him. I'm just being honest here. None of the rookie quarterbacks this year have done anything significant yet. And yes, I know it's only two games. I get it. But it's a fact. Can't be assuming Justin Fields, with this roster, mind you, is going to do something special. Remember, they're in Cleveland, away, and they're facing Baker Mayfield's had a good year so far, despite two picks and one touchdown. Leads the NFL, 80% of his passes are complete. That's unheard of. So the task, not easy. His team, Justin Fields, had an idea. When you have your number one wide receiver, Allen Robinson, dropping passes, that's a big problem. Especially for a rookie. You need someone you can depend on. Remember Jay Cutler? Even he had someone to depend on. Matt Forte, 101 catches. Whenever he was in trouble, he knew where to put the football. Now, who does Fields have? I'm not expecting a big-time fill up the stat book type game. I'm not. I think it's going to be a struggle, like all the other rookies we've seen. Like Lawrence and Wilson. Mac Jones, even. Mac Jones might be winning, but that's not because of him. Patriots are carrying defensively and with the players around him. This is all going to be on Justin Fields. That's unfair, by the way, but it's the truth. There is not much around him to support him. And it's going to be up to him to get the job done. What I'm curious to see, how Matt Nagy calls plays and how the players respond. Who's going to be blamed if things don't go right? I may have a grudge about Mitch Trubisky, but let's be assured here, I'm going to take Fields' side if it's Matt Nagy. And it'll prove and vindicate everybody who said Mitch Trubisky was okay and that it was a Nagy problem. It's like I took Fields' side last week. You can't have all those drops. You just can't. That's unfeasible. When you make good competitive passes to a quarterback, you need something. You need some sort of help. You need somebody who has two hands could catch the football. And of all these balls dropping to the ground. That happens this week. I don't blame him. He makes bad decisions. Yeah, it's his fault. But it's also part of learning. I hope he would get better over time. Tell you what, this is a real test. Brown's defense is outstanding. Baker Mayfield's killing it. Now, I know Chubb is hurt, and that could help out at least defensively for the Bears. But you have to contain Baker Mayfield. You have to worry if you're Justin Fields about the defense. If Myles Garrett's coming at you, what are you going to do? Have a good pass rush. Still have Kareem Hunt, too, by the way. Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney. Denzel Ward. I mean, these are very quality players on their defense. This is a contender. Plain and simple, the Browns are a contender. So here's Justin Fields' chance. Here's the Bears' chance to gauge where they are. Are they at that level? I mean, I doubt it, but if they win, they could prove they are. How amazing of an upset would that be, too? Seriously. Go into Cleveland. Home game facing Baker Mayfield, former number one pick, beat him. That'd make headlines. It'd be nice to see, too, and a big confidence boost for Field. Because his counterparts right now don't have much confidence. Not their fault, they have nothing around them. Don't want that happening to Fields. The worst thing that could happen is two touchdowns, four picks, or one touchdown, three picks, and a loss. It's going to hurt him. I know everybody says he's tough, he's different, he's made for the big scene. Maybe he is. But I don't care who you are. If you have a performance like that, if you have no one helping you, it's gonna take a mental toll. Just yet. Anyone here tells me Trevor Lawrence is fine after these first two games, you're crazy. Bad coaching, tons of picks, two losses. No passing yards even. He is not even allowed to throw the ball a lot. Thought Trevor Lawrence was this generational talent who could take the ball in his hands and make plays. It's not looking like it. Not his fault, but still. This will take a toll on you. If it's a bad loss, it will hurt Fields. That's just a fact. I want to see what happens. There is one thing I want to address, though. So Matt Nagy came out and said, wait a minute, Andy Dalton is still our starting quarterback. When he comes back healthy, Andy Dalton will start. Why? And I know I supported Dalton starting originally. Why make that comment? I'm not a believer of guys losing jobs because of injuries. I don't like that. But unfortunately, that's the reality of the business. Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe, Wally Pipp, Lou Gehrig. Wally Pipp's a Yankee legend. Got hurt. Gehrig came in. Rest is history. What are you going to do? Have Lou Gehrig play crazy, then say, Lou, you're done. Time to put back in Wally Pipp. No, you move Wally Pipp around, you take him out entirely, and that's it. There's someone better waiting. Same idea. Now, Fields doesn't perform, different story. But if Fields could play adequate football, he could play average football. Andy Dalton-esque footballer better. He is the player with more upside and more potential. You play him. That simple. It's like last year with Trubisky and Foles, same thing. Trubisky, in a contract year, younger, more upside, play him. Same thing here. Justin Fields, rookie, younger, needs to learn, needs reps, play him. If he's putting up 28 passer ratings in a full game, well, then we'll have a conversation. But if he's putting up similar numbers, better numbers than Andy Dalton, by merit, he should stay. I'm a big believer in meritocracy. I hate politics. I hate favoritism. If you prove to me you're a good football player, you play. If you show me you're a productive worker, you're going to work. I'm not going to fire you. Same idea. If Justin Fields proves by merit that he deserves to stay, he'll stay. And that's it. That's a stupid comment from Matt Nagy. And remember, it holds no ground. Last year, the Chargers said Tyrod Taylor's still our starter. Well, you know what? The fact of the matter is Justin Herbert played the rest of the year. Unfair? Maybe. But Justin Herbert put up good numbers. Keep him in. The Chargers made that statement. It didn't stand. And Nagy's pretty stubborn. Ego. Maybe what he's saying is actually true, and that'd be a joke. And it certainly wouldn't help his coaching and his record and his future here in Chicago. Remember, at the end of the day, Matt Nagy's here to develop Justin Fields. If he cannot demonstrate that he can develop him, bye-bye. And that's it. So it's a very interesting situation, to say the least. A lot of people's butts are on the line, too. For the rest of this year, I mean, this game won't prove everything, but it's going to make an impression. Is Matt Nagy the right coach for Justin Fields? Does Justin Fields work in Matt Nagy? Is Matt Nagy the right coach for Justin Fields? Will Justin Fields work in Matt Nagy's playbook? Can the Bears function with Fields at quarterback and not Dalton or Foles or anybody else? Is this a quarterback problem or a Matt Nagy problem? Will the Bears' O-line hold up against a good defense? Will their defense help out Fields for some turnovers and keep the field short? Will Justin Fields get enough chances to throw the football and not throw 10 or 11 times and that's it? Will the playbook be opened? Will he get a chance to throw the ball downfield and do what he wants to do and show off his talent? These are all big, looming questions in lieu of Sunday. A lot's going to be proven, a lot's going to be said, and a lot's going to be made of what happens. That's a fact. You know what they always say? First impressions are the most important. First impressions here are very important. If we see today and Matt Nagy and Justin Fields don't click, it's not going to work the rest of the year. The Bears have never fired a coach mid-season, but if it doesn't work, I suggest you do it now. Nip it in the bud and move on and find someone who will work with Justin Fields. Justin Fields is talented. Well, if it doesn't work here, we all know who the problem is. And that vindicates Mitch. That vindicates every other quarterback who's played under Matt Nagy. Many people forget this, too. Matt Nagy was not the architect of the Chiefs. Contrary to popular belief, Andy Reid was. Andy Reid was the one who made Alex Smith an actual kind of gunslinger downfield, throwing 4,000 yards. That wasn't Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy's never developed a real quarterback yet. Not saying he won't do it. He has time. Here's his chance. This was his pick. Finally. Say what you want about Mitch. Whatever. It's over. This is his pick. Didn't inherit Fields. Didn't say, I don't want him. Didn't say, oh, I'll develop him, then abandon him. No. This is his pick. His baby. You want him to grow. Need to care for him. Regardless of all this, I don't see the Bears winning. Justin Fields may have a good game. I don't really see that either, but the Bears are not winning this game. It's not being a cynic. It's the fact that they're testing out a brand new quarterback on the road, and the Browns are a hell of a team. Even though Baker Mayfield has two picks, his passer rating is 101. Why? Great completion percentage. And to his credit, does a good job with not much. Odell Beckham Jr. is a shell of himself, and he got hurt. He has Jarvis Landry, whoop-de-doo, and Nick Chubb's hurt. Not going to be easy. Baker still gets the job done. I do believe the Bears' defense will disrupt him, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a close game, and the Browns will come out on top. 21-17, the final score. That's my pick. It's going to be close. It's going to be down to the wire. I think the last quarter, last possession, is really going to make a difference. Don't underestimate Baker Mayfield, Bears fans. I know to some he's a meme and he's a joke, and Browns fans even last year said, is he your franchise guy? Not a bad quarterback at all. Not at all. Very solid quarterback. He's going to come to play. No question. It's up to the Bears to contain him. And how will this O-line combat the Browns defense and their pass rush? Another big question. And again, how will Justin Fields do in his first real start, taking reps with the first team all week and knowing, having the mindset, hey, I'm starting this weekend. How am I going to do? Will anybody help him out? Will Matt Nagy get in his way? Will he be a hindrance or a helper? With all these questions and variables, just because of that alone, I don't see a Bears win. Might be competitive. Maybe things will go well. The Bears won't win. But that's okay. That's okay. What did we say before the season? 2021 is all about development. That's it. Plain and simple. Development. Developing Justin Fields so you know next year, wow, he's a franchise guy. He's going to do great. I don't care if the Bears go 6-11, 7-10, if there's growth from Fields. Justin Herbert last year had a hell of a year. Chargers sucked, but he did great. Looked amazing. They know he's our guy. What about here? That's what needs to happen. Justin Fields could throw for 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 10 picks. Great. We know that he's capable. You come back next year, full year, better team, then maybe you could contend. So even if the Bears lose, it's not a total loss. And I'm not a big moral victory guy, but I'm being serious here. Even if they lose, we can't be judging the game by win or loss. We have to judge it by did they develop. Now, if it's a close game and they blow it, different story. But at the end of the day, did Justin Fields develop? Did we see progress? Do we see a potential franchise quarterback? If we do, I'm happy. If we don't, well, that's going to be a big problem. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Jared Diamond comes up next, so stay tuned. Chicago. Here with John Zaglula, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the author of Swing Kings, a sports writer for the Wall Street Journal, and the founder. Great the talk there newsletter. With Jared Please Diamond. That'll Jared do it Diamond for us to today. Here on it's great to have you on. Chicago. How are you? Big thank you to Jared Diamond
it's
himself.
Great to Matt be Dubio, here. Thanks.
WCKG,
well.
Jim DeTobin, tomorrow. We're here to the White Sox for making World this show a success. First off, remember, you can follow me on Twitter
well,
and Instagram
playoffs,
at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zaglula. And if you want to listen to this show at any time at podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago.
And you manage to survive YouTube, the 6 month gauntlet that is Chicago.com.
Another great show comes to you tomorrow. Really thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe.
Close
so long,
to
everyone.
Equal chance of making it through October, because suddenly we're talking about who's able to win, you know, 11 baseball games, which is clearly something the White Sox are capable of doing. They're not playing great right now. You kind of generally like to go into the playoffs maybe playing better than they are, but it's also important to remember that they've essentially had the AL Central wrapped up for months. And I still believe that they have the ability to turn it on, because this is a very, very good team, even though they've played in a, you know, pretty mediocre division.
So you're not concerned much about the record. It's 27-29 since July 20th. Is that a problem to you or no?
It's not ideal. And certainly a lot of people are going to point to the fact that the White Sox have been able to build up this record by playing 19 games against Minnesota, 19 games against Kansas City. And look, that's just a fact. It's true. They have had an easier time from a schedule perspective than some of these other postseason teams, especially some of those teams in the AL East that goes four teams deep. But it doesn't really matter once you get into October. Like, are you asking me, do I think that the White Sox have the ability to go win 3 out of 5 games from the Astros in 2 weeks? Yeah, of course they do. They absolutely do. We know the talent is there. You know they have all of those great hitters up and down their lineup. You have confidence in some of their starting pitching. There's no doubt they could go out and win 3 out of 5 games from the Astros, even if they might not necessarily be the favorites heading into that series.
What's the main driver for their success? What's going to help them propel past the Astros?
Look, they're going to have to pitch. That goes, goes without saying. You need good pitching in the postseason. You know that Houston is going to go into October with a lot of experience, with a bullpen that has sort of been there, and you know you're going to need to rely on your bullpen a ton in the postseason. Every single team does. But look, the White Sox have a bullpen that you would think is October ready. That's why they went out and traded and acquired Craig Kimbrell to pair him with Liam Hendricks and, you know, Michael Kopech and Garrett Crochet and Aaron Bummer and all these other guys. They have. They're going to lean very, very hard, I'm sure, on their bullpen in the postseason. You hope that you continue to get, you know, the performance from Lance Lynn that they've gotten all season. I would argue that Lance Lynn is the best starting pitcher that's going to be in that series, a guy that could give the bullpen a rest one game, which will allow the White Sox to lean really heavily on some of those relievers in the other games. And really in the playoffs, often it is which bullpen performs better. And you have to like Chicago's chances in a situation like that.
Are you worried about Kimbrell and his progression since they got him?
Yeah, he hasn't been great. This is not the first time we've seen this from Craig Kimbrell, where he goes through just like a little bit of a rough patch. You know, we saw just in 2020 with the Cubs, he was pretty terrible. And then suddenly for the first half of this year, he was great. So yeah, look, it's concerning. You'd like to see him pitching better heading into the playoffs, but it could turn around quickly. You know, I think about what's happening, you know, here in New York with Aroldis Chapman, who was so great at the beginning of the season and then was so bad in the middle of the season and suddenly inexplicably looks great again. And I have no idea. I don't think anyone really understands how that switch turned on and off. I think certainly the White Sox would like to see a couple good outings from Kimbrell here in the next 10 days or so. But he definitely can do it. We know it's in there. It's just a matter of whether that he's able to push that button in the big moment.
Jared Diamond here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, what's the biggest problem the Sox could face in the playoffs?
Well, look, they are probably, at least some might argue, sort of the least accomplished team in terms of the schedule they face and in terms of really experience heading into the postseason. Houston, you know, we know has been to 2 World Series. Tampa Bay was in the World Series just last year. You know, you look at the other American League teams, whether that's Boston, whether that's New York, these are teams that have really been there. The White Sox have not They have a lot of sort of young players. Yes, they had a little taste of the postseason last year, but certainly not under the circumstance they're going to be going to the postseason this year. So you do wonder how some of these younger guys are going to respond. The Eloy Jimenez's, the Luis Roberts, even the Tim Andersons, just being on that big stage for the first time. But we've seen young teams that don't have a lot of experience, thrive. So maybe we'll see that these guys are ready to thrive and rise to the big stage. And like we were just talking about before, I think getting Craig Kimbrell right will go a long way. You know, maybe it's too late for that to happen, but look, there's still 10 days or so to go in the season. I think that's enough time for him, hopefully, to figure out what's ailing him at the moment.
Which teams are you most concerned about in getting in the Sox way and possibly knocking them out?
Well, you're starting with Houston, which is not exactly a pushover, right? This is the team that was in the World Series 2 years ago, was in the World Series 4 years ago, was shockingly close to going to the World Series just last year, which I think people forget that because the Astros really weren't that good in the regular season, the shortened pandemic season, and yet they went to set the game seven of the ALCS against Tampa Bay. So that's really scary. Every team in the American League postseason field is really good. Houston is one that's particularly frightening just because you know that these guys, you know the Altuves, you know the Correas, you know the Bregmans of the world, they always kind of elevate their performance in October. They've been doing it for years, and that's very, very scary when you're facing a team that's going to have a lot of confidence, a lot of experience, and an extensive track record of success on the biggest stage. And that's really what Houston has.
Do you see Houston winning the pennant, or who do you see winning from the AL?
It's funny. If you ask me to pick right now, like the playoffs are tough. They're a crapshoot. They're really hard to predict. But if you ask me right now who I think is going to win the American League, I do think it's going to be Houston. Tampa Bay has been great all year. They're kind of scuffling a little bit right now. They're not sort of playing at their best. I know personally I would love to see a Houston-Tampa Bay rematch in the ALCS. I know the people in Chicago listening to this don't want to hear that, but that was such a great series last year. Those two teams going to seven games that I wouldn't mind as a baseball fan seeing it again. And I really do like Houston. I just think they're a great team. They've gotten incredible starting pitching from unexpected places. Guys like Framber Valdez and, you know, Jose Urquidy and Luis Garcia. These aren't exactly big names. They've all been very, very good. Lance McCullers Jr. has been very, very good. And of course, that lineup, they're scary. And I think they also have something to prove because they know that, you know, everybody still hates them and there's a lot of eyeballs on them. And they really seem to have embraced that role as baseball villains. And frankly, I think that's good. I think it's good when sports have a villain, when there's a team that the nation rallies against, and that team embraces that role and sort of feeds off that sometimes negative energy. And I think the Astros have a very, very good job of filling that role.
Let me ask you this, Jared. Let's say the Astros beat the White Sox. The White Sox are eliminated. Would you still consider their season a success?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure there's some White Sox fans that won't see it that way, which to me is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. This is a team, A, that's built for the long haul, that is just the beginning of its window. This is the team that's still figuring out how to win, how to succeed. And this was a huge step in that direction. And I just don't see how anyone could say otherwise. We've seen some of these young players put together these really excellent performances, the kind of performances you want to see. And they've done this, by the way, with Eloy Jimenez injured for a lot of the season, with Luis Robert injured for a lot of the season. Those are the two guys one might argue are the biggest pieces sort of moving forward in the future. So I don't see how anyone could say that a 90-win season, which the White Sox will likely have, is anything but a success. I'm sure there's some disappointment that they haven't gone out and won 95 games. They're not going to win 100 maybe they hoped for more, but they're about to win the division for the first time in how long? I'm sure there's a lot of White Sox fans that could easily pull that year out of their head. They haven't won a division since 2005. I mean, it's been, or 2008, I should say. 2008 was the last time they won the division. It's been over a decade. I'm talking about 13 years. To get back to the top of the AL Central, to open up this window and to start continuing moving forward with this young core that everyone's so excited about, it's absolutely a success. And by the way, like I've said at the beginning of this, there's no reason they can't go out there and beat the Astros. I do believe that you put a team under the bright lights suddenly, they no longer are sort of cruising. They're in games that really matter, and the team's able to turn it on. There's no doubt that they have the talent.
Jared Diamond here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, who's your pick for AL MVP?
Man, oh man. Like I think there's a lot of people out there suddenly that are really on the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. train. And like, it's hard to argue with them. In any other year, this wouldn't even be a conversation. The guy's having absolutely incredible, incredible season, you know, a near triple crown caliber season. Nonetheless, in spite of his sort of struggles at the plate in recent weeks, I think it's really hard to pick against Shohei Ohtani, just because what we're seeing is so unprecedented. I mean, we're literally talking about something, not only something that no one's ever done before, but something that until now, no one believed was humanly possible to happen. The guy has 45 home runs. He's going to have over 100 RBIs. He has 95 as we sit here today on Wednesday afternoon. So barring a real meltdown, he's going to have 100 RBIs. Plus, oh, by the way, he has a 3.28 ERA. He struck out 146 batters in 123 innings. It's completely insane what he's done. And I'm sorry to Blue Jays fans out there. It's not a criticism of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. The guy's having an insane season. He's one of the best young players in baseball. But if I were voting, which I do not, being a Wall Street Journal reporter, we do not vote for awards. But if I did, Shohei Ohtani would be my vote. And don't worry, if you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you have a chance to get the last laugh. The Angels are going nowhere, and the Blue Jays are very likely going to the postseason. So I'm pretty sure Guerrero would trade the MVP for a chance to win a World Series.
Is the Triple Crown significant, though? Like, if Guerrero actually gets the Triple Crown, does that change your mindset at all?
You know, I would love the discourse if that actually happens, if he is able to win the Triple Crown. Look, it has happened before that players who won Triple Crowns did not win MVP. It's happened. It's not completely unprecedented. It's unusual for it to happen. And the only way it wouldn't the only way it could happen is that if somebody does something even more impressive than winning a Triple Crown. And honestly, like hitting 50 homers and being an ace starting pitcher in the same year, that's even more rare than winning a Triple Crown. Really, it will take something completely unheard of and unimaginable for that to happen. And that's what Ohtani's done. Anyway, I'm not sure the Triple Crown is going to happen. That RBI, I think those RBIs are going to be tough at this point. Guerrero's quite a little bit behind. I think it's going to be a tough road for him to get that RBI crown.
What about Royals fans who claim Salvador Perez deserves a shot? What do you say to them?
look, he's had an amazing season. He's had an amazing, like, I do not understand how Salvador Perez has 46 homers, 115 RBIs. I don't think anyone does. It's completely insane. He's a 31-year-old catcher. He's appeared in 151 games, some of which a DH, but nonetheless, 151 games. As a regular catcher, he's at 46, 115 runs batted in. He's 31 years old. It's completely insane. Don't know how it's happened, but he's not going to win MVP. I'm sorry. He's despite the great performance, he's, let's say, a distant third.
How about in the National League? Who do you like winning there?
You know, I think Bryce Harper has now separated himself a little bit from Fernando Tatis. I think there was this sort of feeling for a while earlier in the season that it was going to come down to, well, whichever team made the playoffs, that's who was going to win MVP, whether it was Tatis or Harper. Well, neither of them are making the playoffs, it looks like. And the Padres' collapse has just been so monumental and so public and so unexpected that I think by no fault of his own, I think it's been really hard for Tatis to win MVP. He's had an unbelievable season. He has been the bright spot in what has been an unbelievably depressing year in San Diego. I mean, the fact that they're not going to make the playoffs is shocking. And really, talk about a season that's a failure. That season has been a failure in San Diego, a big debacle. And Bryce Harper has been unbelievable. I mean, he leads the majors in OPS as we sit here today. He's a .313 batting average. He has 33 home runs. And the other thing that he has is the games played. We know that games played is an important consideration when you're talking about MVP. Bryce Harper's played in 130. Tatis has played in fewer. I don't even think he's played in 120 as we sit here today because of the shoulder injury. He's at 118 games. We sit here right now. So if I had a vote for that, Harper would be my guy. This is his best season since 2015. And it's a good reminder, by the way, that Bryce Harper is really, really good, because I think people sort of forgot that a little bit.
How do you explain the Padres' collapse?
Talk about everything going wrong. This will be dissected all winter long, clearly. Look, they've had a lot of injuries. Let's not forget that. They've had a lot of injuries. Not all of this has been their fault. They didn't have Fernando Tatis for a long time. They've had injuries in their starting pitching, but really just as much as they've had underperformance. I mean, Yu Darvish and Blake Snell, who are supposed to be these big 1A, 1-1A aces to pair with Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado, have not been good. Their ERAs are both comfortably over 4. Darvish in particular has been really bad lately after a very, very good start. So while Tatis and Machado have certainly held up their end of the bargain, they've both been great. Pretty much no one else has. And it's not just Darvish and Snell that have been problems in the rotation. While Joe Musgrove has been very, very good, Chris Paddock has been disappointing, and Denelson Lamet's been injured and not very good when he's been healthy. Really, everything that could have gone wrong besides Tatis and Machado has gone wrong with them. It certainly hasn't helped their case that the Giants sort of come out of nowhere to have the best record in the majors. Nobody saw that coming, but the reality is the Padres have as much talent on their roster as any team in baseball, and now they're fighting just to finish 500. And it really has been a failure, and they're going to head into this offseason now with a lot of soul searching to figure out how they ended up in this situation, because I certainly didn't see it coming.
Do you see changes coming this offseason? Is James Tingler on the hot seat?
It's hard to imagine him coming back. And look, I don't really know Jace Tingler because of the realities of the pandemic, right? He started as the manager of the Padres in 2020. There was no real media access in 2020. And here we are again, 2021. We're still not in the clubhouse with these guys. So personally, I've not had a chance to ever interact with Jace Tingler outside of Zoom. So I don't feel qualified to say much about him personally, but just common sense tells you that when you have a team with as much hype as this, with as many expectations as the Padres did, to combust in this way, of course they're on the hot seat. And I expect if he loses this job, the Padres are going to look for someone with a little more experience, sort of a Buck Showalter, Bruce Bochy type, to try to get this group in order.
More to come with Jared Diamond in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Jared Diamond still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Jared, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, the 30 newsletter. How'd it start?
Yeah, so the 30 is a collaboration with me and a good friend, Mike Vorkunov, who covers the NBA for The Athletic. And about 5 years ago, we had this idea of talking to some sports writer friends of ours and doing little interviews, asking them questions about their careers and about the industry, just sort of a something that maybe for aspiring sports writers, people that were interested in sports media, to check out to get a sense of how people got into this crazy business and how people's careers developed. And we started doing that and posted them on a blog. And yeah, people started reading them. To our surprise, there was some interest. So we decided to sort of build it out from there, start a newsletter, make the Q&As sort of a main feature of a journalism newsletter. We eventually added journalism job listings. We now, every issue, have dozens and dozens of journalism job listings. And it's become sort of a place for people that want to be journalists, people that care about journalism, to support other journalists and future journalists. And that's sort of what we've been doing. We've been doing it for 5 years. We have thousands of subscribers. We have a Patreon that's been way more successful than I ever could have imagined. So it's been a fun little side project, to say the least.
What's the best Q&A you've had for it?
Oh man, the best Q&A. Oh my goodness, there's been so many good ones. Let me see. Well, one that comes to mind right away is Adam Rubin, who used to cover baseball for ESPN, and then it was no longer working for ESPN when we did the Q&A. That one was pretty interesting because he kind of gave us the dirt on ESPN. that one was really fun, just to hear him sort of give us the inside scoop of ESPN. Yeah, we had Alan Sepinwall. That was a really good one. Used to cover Donald Trump for CNN, formerly the Toronto Star. That was a really good one. I mean, man, there's honestly so many. It's almost hard for me to remember them all, but those are a few that come to mind.
Jared, before we finish up today, last question. How rewarding is it to be a dad?
It's been great. I'm a dad of two now. I have twins who are just shy of 6 months. It's been a crazy year. I haven't been working for a good chunk of this baseball season, but if I have to miss a baseball season, this is a good reason to do so. It's been a blast, and I hope that my wife is ready for me to do some traveling in October and spend some time alone with them. I think it's going to be okay, but yeah, it's been a wild 6 months here, and I high recommendation for anyone who's interested in being a parent. It's been worth it.
Well, Jared, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on. Best wishes moving forward, and can't wait till we catch up again soon. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
Great talk there with Jared Diamond. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Jared Diamond himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobe, and Tomobro Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jonesy Sports and on Facebook at Jonesy Glue. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and sportstalkchicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?